Okay, so they didn't take you to get at least the first $1,000, or did they?
They did. They drove me to a cash machine on the corner of 23rd Street and 6th Avenue. Leader of the gang goes in. I'd already taken out $200 because the following night I was taking my friends out for my birthday to see the musician at the Bottom Line. So there was only $800 left to take on the daily limit. The leader of the gang got that, and then he's trying to figure out other ways he can steal from me. Basically came up with this plot. Well, let's take the guy. Let's kidnap him. Let's blindfold him and take him to our apartment. And, and then in the morning we'll take him to the bank and force him to turn over his money.
Okay, so they blindfolded you so you wouldn't know where their apartment was, but not so you wouldn't see their faces.
Well, that's right. I mean, this was not necessarily the MIT of robbers.
Yeah. I think I've got that.
Their plan was hatched sort of on the spot. Now, as I mentioned to you, I purposely kept my face down in the car, and so that I wasn't looking at them. I didn't want them to think that I'd be able to recognize their faces.
Their order. I mean, this was your own thinking to sort of look down, right?
That's right. That's right. It was instinctual, and I got to tell you, if you grew up in New York City, you develop some pretty strong instincts.
Sure.
About crime, because you kind of get used to it. You know, I've got some of the vignettes from what happened to me and my brother and other family members growing up in New York are in the birthday party. Some of them are not in there because there wasn't space for all of them in a 300-page memoir.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, once they blindfolded, there was 10 minutes where I could have spotted their faces, and the blindfold really was just keeping me from seeing where they were taking me.
All right. Well, were you nevertheless putting together in your mind a mental picture of what you could see and remember just on the off chance that you would live through this?
I mean, one of the things that's real interesting, I think I don't want anybody who's driving right now to do this, but anybody who's at home in a safe place, if you close your eyes for a few minutes, you'll see that you can see a lot with only your ears. It's amazing what you can pick up through your other senses besides sight. And so, once I was blindfolded, I just went into that mode. And the one thing that's really interesting also is that, I think none of us really knows how we're going to perform when we're challenged in this way. But you have extraordinary strength in you when you have an emergency like this happening. And I was very focused. So I was listening to everything that was happening. Anytime I had the chance to sort of negotiate for my life by being polite or giving a decent answer that wouldn't make them angry, I would do it. And I also started gathering clues from the minute I was in there.
Uh-huh. What kind of stuff were they asking you anyway? Obviously about the money, but what other stuff?
I mean,
obviously they asked, what do you do for a living? I'm a federal prosecutor. Okay, boom.
Yeah. Well, I'm an assistant U.S. attorney. I mean, one of the things that's really that I like about my own book is that it's both incredibly scary and also really funny. I mean, these guys are actually trying to relate to me and figure out what was going on. So they're like, You got a wife? No. You got a car? No. I live in Manhattan. Who has a car?
Right.
You're 38 years old? Yeah. You got a girlfriend? Well, I'm casually dating someone. I wasn't going to tell them that. No. Okay. So Stanley, you got all this money in the bank. You're 38 years old. You're not. You ain't married. You ain't got no wife. You ain't got no kids. What the hell have you been doing? to which I respond that you should ask my parents. They've been wondering the same thing. and it's real interesting. I mean, them having me in there, they started to sort of play with me and kind of get to know me, sort of find out what my life was like. So there's some real interesting interactions. And I think that my instinct was to be as nice and polite and decent as possible. There's no way I was going to like bust up and say, hey, if you guys don't let me go, you're going to be put in prison for the rest of your lives because I'm a federal prosecutor. I wasn't going to do that.
Good thought. But, I mean, after all, kidnapping, robbery is bad enough, but kidnapping, particularly of the kind where you're blindfolded and taken somewhere, that's a big offense.
It's an extremely serious crime, and one of the reasons I wrote the book is I want people to understand what it feels like to be the victim of this kind of a violation. It stinks. You know, like you said before, your mugging's over in 5 minutes or less. You know, the thought that you have to go through hour after hour, it's kind of psychological torture of knowing that people who couldn't care less about you can just end your life on a whim. This was real psychological torture for a lot of hours.
Did you were you able to figure out whether these were killers?
When I got, you know, they blindfolded me and they drove me to an apartment. I wasn't quite clear where. It seemed like it was somewhere on the Brooklyn-Queens border. When I got there and they were talking to me in the beginning, they kept calling me Steven. I kept saying, my name's not Steven, it's Stanley. And they were laughing. They were like, oh, yeah, that's the guy we did this to the other night. Now, that the couple of guys that they'd done it to before, they had not taken to the apartment. They'd only taken them to the bank, gotten the money, and then they'd let them go. So I knew from what they told me that there were other robberies involved. As to whether they had killed somebody, I never knew it. I still don't know it for sure. I pretty much doubt it. I think these guys were, you know, this was like a startup venture. You know, they were just getting going.